For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, back with another Non-League original audio hour of insight and views. I'm not alone either. Joining me this week, the man who used to have the nickname of Angry, but in retirement is more like your favourite uncle, who knows a bit about football. Former AFC Wimbledon manager, Harrow Borough manager, Chertsey Town, and many, many more, Mr. Dave Anderson.
Good afternoon. Good morning. Matt's just told me, I know you're going to introduce him in a minute, but he's just told me a good story about Angry Anderson, but Matt can fill us in on that again in a minute.
Well, he's given the game away, because there is more here. And keeping the family theme, you'll see why later. My other fellow presenter is like a distant cousin. He's the sort of person you hear so much about from other contacts, other people in the game of football. But I don't think we've ever met. It's just sort of it's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show Matt Gray, manager at Sutton United.
Thanks, Tim. Hopefully all good things you've heard.
They are all good things. They're all good. And you've already spotted a picture here at Hazen Yenning United of yourself. In younger, thinner days.
Yeah, I was going to say it's gone from an XL to a medium in the photo.
Yeah, it was an FA Cup game against Wrexham. So I'm probably guessing around 2003-2004. So it seems a long time ago.
Well, at least it was in colour.
Yeah.
Well, it's a bit of a grey day outside. But what about you guys? Have been a good week in terms of football?
We've got a couple of training sessions. We always have Thursdays off. So we'll be back in tomorrow preparing for the game against Stockport. But myself and Jason Goodliffe, my assistant, we went up to Solihull on Tuesday night to watch their game against Wrexham. So I let my Tottenham ticket down. So I was quite pleased with that when I saw the result. It's not often you say you'd rather be at Solihull than Tottenham. But
yeah.
I certainly was on Tuesday night. So it's been a busy week, but good.
And Dave, what, lots of golf? Or?
Yeah, lots of golf. I'm playing again today, you know. Big man's cried off, but, you know,
got work,
his form isn't great, so I understand them crying off. But no, I've been fine. I've just been keeping tabs on. This is a good weekend at the FA Cup weekend. I've spoken to a couple of people about how they're getting on and some good ties. And I know we're going to cover Hadley in a minute, but it is the competition. The one thing I was going to bring up, and I haven't sort of checked it out, but I've read on Twitter now about Gray's being thrown out. And they're linking it with Liverpool in the Carabao Cup. I don't know where that's...
Yeah,
is that an FA competition?
It's not. I mean, it's a fair point that people are making. We covered last week briefly with the non-league paper roundup. Gray's Athletic thrown out of the FA Cup for playing a player that didn't have international clearance, despite the fact that he'd played for two other clubs in this country since not having that international clearance. I think he played one game as a student or something like that. And it's one of those strict liability offences that the rules say you need international clearance.
Yeah.
What Grays could have done, no one can point to anything else they could have done. They've done all the necessary checks. They've asked the player. The player's filled in his form correctly. If he's played for two other clubs, you think, well, he must have... how far can you keep checking? You know, you must have... Over time,
well,
you've had players coming to you that have
don't talk to me about it. I've been nailed to the wall band at Wimbledon. But if you check with the FA, surely that's it. Once the FA go, you've got international clearance.
The international clearance thing is very difficult. There's a 30-day period where, you know, if it's not come through in time,
you
can go. And I know it's a discussion we've had with, you mentioned Wrexham earlier. Certainly with any clubs that are based in Wales but are playing in the English leagues, it's always been a difficulty because if they're signing a player from their same league, they have to get international clearance across from the Welsh.
That's where I get stitched up. Jermaine Darlington had retired and his last club was Cardiff, I think, off the top of my head. And I'd talked him out of retirement at Wimbledon and we signed him. The secretary at the time was new to the job because everybody at AFC Wimbledon at that time was new to Evering and didn't think for a minute that someone who was coming out of retirement had to be cleared from anything. But because his last club was Cardiff, that's when we get docked 18 points. And then it went, I forget, it went to three or I mean, it went at appeal. There was all sorts went on that year. I remember Tony Blair talking about it in Prime Minister's Question Time. Sort of my claim to fame in it. But it's just one of them rules. And I think, to be fair, Tony Blair's words, if I'm not mistaken, as Prime Minister said, it's a stupid rule and someone should change it. And all I would say today is, it's a stupid, not that I ever thought I would quote Tony Blair, believe me, it's a stupid rule and someone should change it.
Yeah, on the Twitter stuff that you've been seeing going on, there's been lots of attacks at the FA, that the FA need to change it. And it is the FA's field that they're the ones that can make the difference. The Liverpool issue, it was in effectively the League Cup, the Carabao Cup, as it's now known. And I don't think the FA have the same sort of power over that competition. But Liverpool have been, rather than being thrown out of the competition like Greys have been thrown out of the competition, lost the prize money. The big thing, we'll talk about how important that prize money is to clubs this year in the FA Cup later on. But so Greys have seemed to have lost everything, whereas Liverpool have got a big fine in terms of non-league, but not in terms of Liverpool. And they're allowed to play in the same competition and carry on. So, yes.
Yeah, Liverpool effectively have to go down the back of the city and have a hunt round to get it. That's the sort of fee it is, the Liverpool. But I do, I mean, you know, we feel for Greys, but they are two different bodies, aren't they? So they might, I think the league deal with it as opposed to the FA, don't they?
Yeah, I've already put something into the FA to, try and get a clarification on this sort of thing and some
good
of the
luck
other
with
bits
that.
Of it. Yeah, there's dialogue. We just need some public dialogue. That's the thing, and trying to organise some bits and pieces where we can maybe open it up as a fans forum if some of the suggestions are sort of come to life, but. We'll see how we go on that. So let's talk about Sutton United. We've got Matt here. Now, regular listeners, they would have heard Mr. Anderson in quizzical form a couple of weeks back. I think he basically ambushed you, didn't he, post-golf? And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is obviously... You spent many, many years as an assistant manager, learning the craft across different clubs, and then you're now the top boy. You're in charge. Has that changed the way that you act now? Now you're the other side of the line.
It probably hasn't changed the way I act. I probably still coach the same way. My information to the players is certainly the same. I think you have to, you're concentrating. As an assistant, of just feeding that information into the manager and giving him the few options that he makes the final decision on. Now you're probably taking that information on board from your couple of assistants and your staff, and then you're trying to manage not just the team, but you're managing the club, aren't you? You're managing every aspect of it that can affect the football match on a Saturday. So, I think it's just a lot more responsibility and certainly feel the pressure a little bit more.
I tell you what, you'll notice as well, is you sometimes as a number two, I wouldn't say you worry, but you think, if I didn't turn up, would anybody miss me at times? Any of the understaff, because everybody wants to speak to the manager, but when you become a manager, you realise how important your job as an assistant was, and you will know that now with Jason, It's massive, and you have another member of staff as well, don't you?
Yeah, Mickey Stevens, my two assistants. So, I think... that the link between the players and myself, so that's why it's vital that the staff are trustworthy, reliable. How you recruit your staff is one of the first things I did before I even looked at the playing side of it, really, is am I happy with my staff? Are they maximising what I can give to everything? And then you concentrate on the players after that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think I think the other thing, the only thing, and I'm just thinking of my own, how I did it, was none of my staff ever knew how much players were paid. I never, ever told them. So they gave me a real clear, the guy could be on a pound or could be on £100. So they didn't know that. So they just told me what they thought of him. I knew what he was getting. So I don't know how you deal with that, but it was just something I always did. I always found it good because it's the way I'd been... When I worked under Bob, Bob Dowie, I never knew how much people got. And I always thought it kept my head clear. Yeah. When you then know what they're on and your assistant's going, you know, to be fair, he's not doing bad. And I'm thinking, yeah, but he's getting twice as much as anybody else. He should be doing, so there's that sort of scenario. But would you know wages when you were working as an assistant?
Some I did, because I've worked under numerous managers.
Yeah.
Some I did. Some did tell me. Some didn't. Probably Crawley, I certainly did. I was sort of responsible for the budget, really. And I was, as an assistant, I was still responsible for dealing with the agents and the ins and outs of the players. Obviously, I'd speak to the manager at the time, but I certainly had a more of a hands-on feel there. But prior to that, probably not. Mm-hmm. And I do think I think you're spot on. You would just want that football decision.
Yes,
you don't want any other factors affecting that decision.
You've got that on board. And I think that that's fair enough. You just touched on it there. Another thing that's become bigger over the years is agents. How are they within in the National League now? Is there every player got an agent? Is it something that you found different from, I know you've been in the league and come back in the non-league?
Yeah, I don't think I've dealt with one player who hasn't got an agent. Literally, every player I spoke to in the summer, I wanted to sign or even renegotiate and wanted to keep on, I think, I went through the agent or an agent. And I suppose it's like anything with the agents, there's certainly some bad ones, but there's some good ones as well.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing you want is you just don't want any games. Just be straight, just be honest. Yeah. You know, have they got other clubs interested in them? Or do they want to wait on another week to see if they can get a better move? Mm-hmm. Just tell me that, you know, or let's get the deal done or not, you know. So you just don't want all the games and the little bits of lies and some of the stuff you have to deal with.
I was fortunate because they sort of just started to come in, and then I dropped down where they're... Where if someone had come in with an agent, I'd have shown them the door. What are you doing at this level of football with an agent? But it's certainly at the, but I'm really cynical. And I know a couple, and I get on well with a couple. And I've used a couple in the past nearly as scouts.
Yeah.
Because they do have players if you're desperate.
Yeah.
But I always felt that, well, if you're the player's agent, speak to the player. So if you're going to come in the room, I don't want to send the agent, I want to send the player. But you can't do that now. They've got to be part of massive part of the conversation.
Yeah, the way I've tried to do it from sort of my previous experiences and the way I had to reshape the squad and make numerous signings in the summer was the biggest thing for me is a character and as a person. And, you know, I want them to play for me. And you get a feel for someone when you meet them face to face.
Yes.
So, all right, initially I would speak to the agent on the phone, but every signing I made, and there were some signings I didn't make, but purely based on the meeting with that player.
Yeah.
And I would tell them what I want from him in training, how I see him as a player, how I think their strengths and weaknesses, how I'm going to improve them, what I want from them in terms of on the pitch, you know, with or without the ball. So there's a pure clarity there. So there's no surprises when they come in. Yeah. And then you're suddenly asking them to do something that they maybe not agree with or see. And so I always like to get that conversation out of the way with first. And then I'll go and speak to the agent, you know, about the contract, about the money. I respect that. But once they have signed and they are now part of your squad, and I've had the odd agent ring up and maybe try and talk to me about football, and I just say, well, get the player to come and knock at the office.
And I'll talk to him.
You know, I don't need you to do that. Why should I go for you? Just speak to my player who's getting changed next door.
So,
you know, just tell him. And I'll talk to him about football, you know, about contracts and money. Okay, if that's the way it is. The way it is, but as soon as we get onto the football side of it, I don't need to go through the agent to do that.
And how do you sell, you know, Sutton, to go back to the club, and don't get me wrong, you know, people, I've always enjoyed going to Sutton. I go back to when John Raines, bless him, was manager. We always had a good relationship with the people there, but within the National League, it's not a big club. It's not a club that, when you look at the actual league clubs around it, and in an area where we are, that everybody, there's so many football clubs, Bromley, Woking, yourselves, you know, tagging them all within a small area. Boreham Wood would probably fall in that as well.
Yeah.
But how do you then sell your club?
Well, yeah, there's, I think, the disadvantage is what you said with the amount of clubs you've got in the area, but then you're probably doing an advantage of being London-based and location of players, you know, you're not trying to get something, you're not in the middle of nowhere trying to get people to travel down to you. It's a good location for players to come to you. I think you're trying to, you know, there's still players out there now, and agents still let me know that players are still out of contract. So you've just got to sell what you're trying to do. The level you're at is obviously a very good level, and players want to play, you know, against those clubs, those big ex-league clubs, and feel that that's sort of an opportunity. And I've signed quite a lot of sort of 20, 21, 22-year-olds that, you know, they, you know, no disrespect to Sutton, but they want, don't want to be here too long because they want to have their careers of being a Football League player, and they want to move on and try and play as high as they possibly can. But if they can come in and for whatever period and give their best and showcase themselves, which benefits me, benefits the club, and then I'll shake their hand and move them on, then it's a win-win for everyone. Yeah, parties. Yeah.
And just on that, it's you know, when you when you do bring players in, you know, I suppose because of the budget, I'm only guessing this, I know we're mates and we talk about lots of stuff, but there is stuff that you just don't talk about. But you know, do you have to go young and hungry? Is that a mindset that you've done? So part one, you know, where most of your squad will be young and hungry. Part two is, it's all about your knowledge of players, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't mean you, I mean every manager or someone within the club. It was never me, I was crap at it. But you have to have a vast knowledge of players. So two-part question really, Matt.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at it as a manager, stroke assistant manager, and I've learnt this from a very early stage of my coaching career, you could be the best man manager, you can be the best coach, tactician, whatever you want to call it. But I think the biggest strength you need is your recruitment, because you're only as good as your players. Yeah. So, you know, saying polish the turd, you can talk to them in the right way, you can give them the best information, but if they can't actually go and deliver it, if they haven't got it, then you're struggling, you know. So recruitment is massive. And even though, you know, my budget's down, my squad is done, we're now sitting in October and I can't sign anyone else, I've constantly got to be on top of things, watching games, knowing my players, that if someone then, you know, say one of my young lads does get a move in however long, I need to know who I'm replacing with. I need to have a list of names. And I suppose, I think that's where I've had my little spells out of the coaching in between jobs, and I've gone and scouted for Millwall. I've got to see that recruitment side of things and how they do it at a championship level, and how they're always preparing for the next one, even though they might not be able to do it right now. Yeah. So I think recruitment is massive, and the biggest part for that. But when you're saying I'm going sort of young and hungry, yeah, I want that. I want players to come in with a bit between the teeth and want to play for the club to kick on for whatever reason, and do the best for themselves.
And the other thing is, sorry to interrupt you, is it's a saying, isn't it? Oh, young and hungry. I've met plenty of old and hungry.
Yeah.
You know, I've met people who are the senior part of their career, exactly. And their attitude is better than it was at the start. So it goes both. It's getting the right character.
You're right, Dave. You just want hungry, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I'm always hungry, so I sort of fit the bill, do you know what I mean?
No, it's true. I think why I've had to do this, you know, I've been at this level many times as an assistant, and it is such a tough league, and it is certainly a man's league.
Yeah.
And you do need your experience. And I was fortunate enough to inherit at Sutton a good core of older, experienced players who know what this level is all about, and it was important for me to keep those and the ones I wanted, and I have got that. But with the remaining of, you know, without really wanting to talk about budget, but the remainder of my budget, could I go and afford to go and get another 6-7 experienced players? No, I couldn't. Yeah. They cost more money than a lad who's just come out of an academy, and you're given an opportunity. So it certainly is budget related as well with your signings. But when I've got that hardcore nucleus that I'm happy with, fill it in with young sort of energy, pace, you know, thankful for the opportunity and want to take that opportunity, and hopefully I've got a good mix.
Yeah, we're going to talk FA Cup later in the show, but it's the early rounds at the moment, so you guys aren't involved. I know you're watching from afar, but when we talk to managers week in, week out at the moment, they're one of the gripes they've got is that they can't concentrate on the league because it's week in, week out. There's a cup, there's a league, there's a cup, there's a cup. Whereas you guys, you've played, 14 games already of the league, and it's just been league and league and league. Is that as frustrating for you as it is for a manager that's having to switch priorities from cup to league? Because, you know, sometimes you just need a little bit of let-up, don't you, and just sort of a little bit of diversification as a manager.
Yeah, it's certainly felt relentless since the first game of the season. I'm not the only National League manager saying about the volume of games that we've had to play, because at the intensity and the frequency of the games, to have so many in such a short space of time, with the thinness of the squad and, you know, your restraints that you're trying to work under, and the facilities. There's, you know, the Premier League managers, if they had to play the amount of games that they've played in this short space of time, they'd be uproar. You know, yeah. They'd be moaning non-stop. But then you look at their facilities and the amount of physio staff, the recovery, the pools, and we haven't, you know, literally, lads, look after yourself, eat well.
And we go, see you later.
Yeah, see you later again, yeah. Have a little tick over in training.
Turn the lights on.
You turn up for training, you don't want any more injuries, because we had a spell where we really got hit hard by injuries for 2 or 3 weeks. So you don't want any more injuries in training, so you're literally doing non-contact, ticking the legs over and just preparing them and pushing them out again for another game. It has been relentless, but now I suppose we're coming into the period and now where the cuts are going to start for us, having already played a third of the season. It's ridiculous.
I know, so quickly. So you'd basically be going, what, 2 games a week or 2 games 1 week, game a night? Which is
tough.
I've had a look at some of your journeys and it can be... Well, you'd have to say luck. But sometimes, Tim, you look at a run of games, you go, oh, how does that come out that way? Because I know you're in a little run, like travel-wise I'm talking about. Solihull, you're in Harrogate.
We got Solihull away on Tuesday and then filed away on Saturday.
Yes.
Nice, good week, isn't it?
So you might as well get the bus on, stay up there for a while, up north. But that can be an unlucky thing, because obviously... travels tiredness and the aches and pains, you get less time to recover. And if you get a little group of them together and you lose a couple, which is possible, 2 or 3, it drains confidence. You know, there's a do you understand what I'm that point? And how do you keep on top of that stuff?
Yeah.
If you say 1 game at a time, I'm going to hit you.
About using a cliche, Dave. Try not to be that cliche manager.
Yeah.
I want to say 1 game at a time, though.
Well, it is a good set. It literally is.
It is true.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it is true. You know, you sort of the information I'm trying to get into the players is this league is so tough. Anyone can beat anyone. Such thin dividing lines. We've been in every single game, and whether we've beaten Chesterfield 4-0 at home, you cannot get too high. And you have to come back in on Monday because you've got Dagenham at home on Tuesday. And then suddenly we've lost at home to Dagenham. So there's your high and low within 4 days of football. Yeah. But you've got to try and keep level to then go, okay, park that one in for the next training session to prepare
for the next one. I get that as a staff. I think that, but it's portraying that to the dressing room. You know, your footballers are roller coaster rides, you know. And I think the older you get and the more cynical you get and the more experience you get, you do flatline. It is an essential part of what you do. But how do you get that over to your dressing room?
Consistency in what you do. I think it's consistency. So I've sort of let the squad know how we work, how we train, what we do. I believe in what I do. I believe in how we train. I believe in how we play. And I'm going to be consistent with that. And I'm not going to let one result of a positive or a negative affect what I'm doing. Yeah. Because we are going to win matches and we are going to lose matches.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep that consistency there. And I've been a big one. I think that the biggest thing I've noticed, obviously I'm talking more to the players, especially on a match day. You can affect the result in your training, your build-up. You can affect the result before the game in your talk. You can affect it at half-time. But suddenly I find... So I knew this would happen, but after games... I can't affect what's just happened because I can't change the result. The result is done now.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah.
So I've said to the players before the game, before the season started, after games, I'll say nothing or hardly anything at all straight after a game because I feel I'm emotional because you've just been in the technical area. The players are emotional in whatever way, whatever's happened or whatever goes on during that 90 minutes, that I will come in and pretty much not say anything. So go away. Reflect. I watch the game back always on the Sunday, and then on Monday morning when we come in, we will have a meeting
and go do your.
And now in a cold light of day, when everyone's calm, I've watched it back again because you can sometimes have your opinion of the game, and then you watch it back and think actually,
it
wasn't as bad as I thought, or it was better than I thought. Yeah. You know, you can then or even show players clips nowadays with the technology you've got.
Fantastic,
so you can have that. You can have your debrief. Your debrief doesn't have to be 2 minutes after the game.
Yeah.
It can be 48 hours or 24 hours later, whenever you need to do it to get that in. So you don't want, what I'm saying to the players is I don't want it to go, oh, we've got beat at home, or you know, you lost 3-0 or whatever.
Yes.
Oh, the manager's not said anything.
But they know. Yeah.
They know, whatever the result, this is how we do it.
And on a Monday, we'll pick the bones of it.
Exactly.
I think it's a great idea because it could get you in the bar 20 minutes earlier. No, but it's, and to be fair, Tim, and you know, I've been hogging this because I'm always interested in, not mate, but manager, speaking to different managers, brilliant. But the technology and what's available to people at match level now is fantastic. You know, to sit and watch a game back. I mean, I manage maybe 2,000 games. I've only ever seen a handful of them because none of them are I mean, you've got the best one, but we'll not go there.
Wonder what that is.
Well, not for the next 10 minutes anyway. But,
you watch it again this morning.
That's why I was late, you know. It's brilliant because you can't have, as much as you think you've seen something and you watch back and go, oh, players can be the same. They can confront you about it and go, no, that didn't happen. And they genuinely believe it. But now you go, well, by the way, have a look at this.
Yeah.
Or let's have a look at her set, Peter, our shape. Or, you know, I just think it clarifies a lot. And if you know what you're doing, it strengthens what you are. And you can show it to the players. And it strengthens their confidence in what you are. And there's, you know, how can you not get better through watching yourself? I think it's a great asset to have.
I'll probably even use it this week. I probably won't mention the player, but I've been on to him for weeks about a certain aspect of his game.
Yeah.
And he looks at you and you think, is he believing what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And he looks at you and he's going, yeah. So he's agreeing with you. And then suddenly you're showing a video and he goes, oh, yeah. And
you think, yeah, yes, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I've actually seen it now. Yeah. And you're like, well, I've been telling you.
Yeah. The first year is to get out of the office. Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah, gaffer, yeah. Woof. But now, visually.
It's suddenly like penny drop. Crikey, I didn't realise.
Yeah. And I think it's a massive asset.
Yeah.
So it's FA Cup weekend with a third qualifying round. Just the 40 ties this time around, with the winners knowing that not only will they bag a healthy prize pot, but they'll also have a chance of meeting the National League clubs in the next round. And also, they're just one more away from the first round topper. It's exciting for those clubs involved and exciting for those who love the FA Cup. And nobody loves the FA Cup as much as our next guest. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, the ever excitable at FA Cup Fact File, Mr. Phil Annetts.
Hi, Tim. Yes, I am very excited about the FA Cup this weekend.
But you just got 40 ties this round, Phil. What have you been doing with all that extra time on your hands?
I know, it's been a breeze. It's been very easy. But very exciting ties, though, coming up.
Yeah, the North-South divide, with 17 ties in the northern section, 23 ties in the southern section, it's created some interesting ties, such as Whitby Town against Gloucester City.
Yeah, that's one heck of a trip, isn't it, for Gloucester City? I think they're used to travelling to their home games a little bit, but this is one heck of a trip. Quite interestingly, though, there's quite an interesting element to this round in that hardly any of the teams have played each other before in the FA Cup. And I don't know whether that's a factor of the North-South divide spread or whether it's different teams that are making it this far, but it is quite intriguing that only four ties contain two ties who have met before.
That's what we like. We like the FA Cup to be a bit different. And we, you know, being different, we got to mention the prize fund again. The winning clubs collecting, 11,250 from the FA prize fund this round, and losing clubs still taking away 3,750. For those clubs lucky enough to have been successful in this year's FA Cup, it's surely made a massive difference to their season this season, but probably seasons to come as well.
You're not wrong. You take someone like Dunstan, they're making it into the third qualifying round for a second successive season, having started at the extra premier round. So that means they've won 9 FA Cup ties over the last 2 years. So you can imagine how much money they've been generating as a consequence of that. And if they win again, obviously, as you say, it's another 11 or so thousand pounds into the coffers, and another fantastic run for them.
And that's all before we get to the first round proper and those golden glamour ties that everybody always waits for. It all kicks off this round, again, on the Saturday lunchtime kickoff. The BBC have chosen the game at How's Owen Towne against... How's Owen Towne against Altrincham. Was that a good choice?
I think it is a good choice in a sense that it's step four versus step two. So you've got an opportunity for a cup set, if you like. Also, Altrincham have, people of a certain age have a good memory of Altrincham's cup run in the past. So there'll be a bit of a draw there. So I think there were several ties that could have been chosen. And I think that one has merit, and I'm quite happy for them.
Yeah, we're going to speak to one of the Step 5 clubs left in the competition later on in the show, but only three remain. And I remember you mentioned last time that the restructure had impacted on the chance of progress of those lower down the pyramid. Do you think it's taken some of the magic out of the competition?
I don't think the magic has been taken out of the competition. I mean, I know we'd all like the underdogs to do well, but I think Step allocations this year have changed, obviously, as a consequence of the restructure. I think it's nice and romantic to have what are called in quote step 5 and step 6 teams, but ultimately they are those teams. They just actually have a slightly higher set. So if you look at, say, Chertsey and Chichester and Dunstan, they were all step 5 last year, who have made it into this round after having started off at the extra premier round. I think that the label, whether or not there's enough of those level of clubs that are allowed to enter the competition in the first place, that's the real issue.
It's all about those allocations. How many people can enter the FA Cup? And hopefully that's something that we can keep lobbying the FA about. There are some tasty ties this time around. You know, there might only be 40 of them, but you look down the list and you think, oh, that looks a good one. There's some fun stats and history behind some of them as well. You mentioned that, you know, not many clubs that have played each other, but I particularly love the Stourbridge and Stafford Rangers game.
Yeah, I know those two games. Those two teams have met each other 10 times in the FA Cup. Stafford Rangers have a 6-4 win ratio. There's never been a draw in the competition between the two sides. But they haven't met for a heck of a long time. I can't remember how many years it was, but it's a long time since they actually met. And interestingly, in the last round, Stafford Rangers faced Kidderminster Harriers, having had 11, would have been their 11th previous meeting in the competition. And again, they'd had a lot of meetings, but they hadn't met for 50-odd years. So some trend going on there with Stafford Rangers, I think.
Yeah, a smaller selection to choose from this round, Phil. But where are you off to this weekend?
Well, the internet has spoken for me again, and they've sent me to Abbey Rangers taking on Whiteley. So Abbey Rangers being one of the last Step 5 clubs at home against Step 4 Whiteley. There's an opportunity for a cup set there. It's an amazing record that Abbey Rangers have got this year. They've been in the competition three other times and never won a game, and now they've won four games this season alone. So they're ahead on their win to lose ratio on this season's campaign alone. So I'm really looking forward to going down there. It should be a great game. Either side has a chance of winning, so really hoping, and hopefully the weather will be our friend and it'll be a good day out.
Well, with that record already, it sounds like the clubhouse celebrations are going to be in full swing as soon as that final whistle goes, whatever the result.
Obviously, a win would make them swing a lot better for Abbey Rangers, of course. But there are some other places where there's a guaranteed history to be made. We've got Maldon and Tiptree, who are hosting Chertsey Town. Neither side has been beyond the third qualifying round before. So whoever wins that tie will make history for the club. And Chertsey are keen to be that club, because if they lose, they will create an unwanted bit of history for themselves, which is that they would be the team that has most third qualifying round appearances without ever having appeared in the fourth qualifying round in their history.
Ouch. Yeah, that's definitely one that they want to avoid picking up. They're the sort of stats we love you for, Phil. This is, of course, just a selection of the facts and stats that you produce every round. Remind listeners of how they can follow you and read all about your excellent work.
They can follow me on Twitter at FA Cup Fact File, I also run a WordPress blog, FA Cup Fat File, at wordpress.com. And you can find me on Facebook at FA Cup Fat File as well. So do follow all of those social media links.
Well, Phil, no doubt you will have a fantastic weekend. You know, there'll be plenty of stats for you to organise. And I guess when the draw takes place on Monday as well, you're going to be even more excitable. But thanks again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and we look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thanks, Tim.
So let's talk to the manager of one of those Step 5 clubs remaining in this season's FA Cup. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, manager at Hadley FC, Anthony Clark.
Hi.
Good to have you on, Anthony. Now, let's start with a bit of a brief intro to the club, and perhaps I should turn to the unofficial historian alongside me of Hadley FC, Mr. Matt Gray. I mean, Matt, this is a club that means a lot to you.
Yeah, it's a club of... supported and followed since I was out of nappies, really. My granddad, I think, joined the club when he was 15. He was involved all the way up until he sadly passed away in 98. My dad, player, chairman. I think my dad came through the same, straight out of nappies following the club, and myself and my brother. I left school at 16 and went and signed for Spurs, but my brother went and carried on playing and played all the way through until he stopped playing. And now he's pretty much run the club full time now. So he's got Anthony in as manager, and I'm sorry, you have to deal with him every day, Ant.
I had a look through the club's history, and there were more more Greys mentioned than in Dave Anderson's barber. But Anthony, we've got FA Cup weekend for you guys, and a tough trip to National South side at Havenham Waterlooville. Now, Paul Doswell's the manager down there, and it was a manager alongside Mr. Gray. So I guess there's a big fact filer landed in the dressing room, telling you of all the potential short corners and how Havenham Waterlooville are going to set themselves out.
Yeah, I suppose we ain't actually had that chat yet. That might be for tonight or tomorrow. But I suppose it was a big draw for the club. To be honest, I would have maybe, I was sort of disappointed when we actually got the draw. I would have probably preferred maybe an easier draw on paper. But obviously now the dust has settled, everyone's sort of buzzing for the trip on Saturday.
And certainly for a club like yours, it must be, at least an away day like this, you mentioned that buzz. It's a good way of gelling the players together and just getting everybody up on a high.
Oh, of course, the club are actually buzzing. I think it was the best probably draw for the club. Is in the committee are over the moon, because obviously I think there'd be a big crowd up there, and the players are buzzing because obviously they can go and test themselves against probably on paper the best team in the competition at this moment.
Yeah, and the club's been in existence, I think, is it 1882? I think it's the same year as Spurs as well, isn't it? It's only the club's 10th FA Cup campaign, and this is as far as they've ever been. I mean, could this be history in the making this weekend?
I'll answer that.
Good question.
Go on, Hank. Go on.
I wouldn't put your mortgage on it, but we will go there and try it. We go there and try our very best to make history.
And to be fair, Ant, how do you go about a game like this? Well, obviously you can have as much knowledge on Havenham as you want, because it's available these days. I'm sure Matt can help you with that stuff. So how much will you change what you normally do? Because will you work a lot on what they do, or will you just try and be what you are and go and have a go, as they say?
I think, Dave, we will, if I'm honest, I won't change too much. And the boys have done fantastic. I think we've won four rounds to get to where we are. Havenham and Waterloo, obviously, like I said, probably the best team at the moment in the competition. So, I would probably just go there and have a go. I wouldn't change too much. I want the boys to go there and relish the day, just give everything they've got and enjoy the day. Because probably these days don't come around often for clubs like, Step 5 clubs like Hadley.
Absolutely, yeah.
I've watched the club pretty much be part football. Cut the oranges out, put the corner flags out, put the nets up. I've done all those years with my brothers and And my mates like coming to watch them. You know, I've run the line and different things from my dad. And to see how Hadley have moved on and progressed in such a short space of time to come up the pyramid and to, well, for last year to set the highest ever league position the club's had, with Anthony in charge, finishing third in the South Midlands League. They did get to the third qualifying round a few years ago and drew Eastbourne Borough, which was a great achievement and actually took them to a replay. But no disrespect to Eastbourne, but I think having with the size of the club and what, you know, just been relegated from the National League and the players that they've got there, they're National League players, and this in living memory is the biggest game for this football club. But certainly no pressure, Ant.
No, exactly. Yeah. And to be fair, with that, and listen, we know all about Havant, and we can tell you a million things about their players. But and don't worry, Paul Doswell won't be listening to this. But if I was coming to watch the game, sorry, who do you need to look out for in your squad? Who's your big players? Don't say all of them. I won't settle for that. I want your best defenders and who's going to change the game for you.
I got a forward in pre-season just from a little friendly, and it was actually, we got him from Steve's father, Ian. But he's probably our biggest danger man. His name's Solomon Afori. He's our forward, and if we were to get anything out of the game, you would think that he's going to have one hell of a game.
Yeah.
Defensively, I've got Paul Wright, the captain, Sammy Lyons, Tom Milton. So they're all, again, going to have very strong games, you know, for us to get anything out of the game.
Yeah, I've seen Hadley numerous times, obviously, over the last year or two, and Solomon certainly brought something different to you, and as he, you know, he's lightning quick, and it doesn't matter what level you are. You don't want to play against pace, do you? And then,
he's lightning quick,
and he is a threat. Listen, having, you know, it'll be extremely tough to play against. He'll probably be one of the biggest FA Cup shots, but you're in a puncher's chance, aren't you? You're there. All the pressure's on them.
It makes, listen, that's why it's the competition. It is, you know, it's rounds like this, and don't get me wrong, and you'll have been the same. I've sat where Dawes is going to sit Saturday.
Yeah,
you know, I've sat where you're the massive favourites, and it's a real uncomfortable place to be, you know, until you get the game out of the way, and the longer the game's in doubt, I'm telling you, it's a nervy place to be, and that translates into the dressing room, onto the terraces. So, you know,
he's in a no-win situation.
No, exactly. Whereas the lads,
8-0, you win 8-0, everyone goes, all right, well, so what? Yeah, many levels below,
I think the lads can go and enjoy and properly have a go and enjoy the day. I'm just with we've got your league table. You're doing all right. You're sitting fifth in the league, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
It just gives me your goal difference. I was trying to work out: do you concede goals? Do you score? What's your big thing? Do you score goals? Concede? Are you 5-4 winners or are you 1-0 winners?
No, we're more 1-0, 2-0 winners. I mean, last year I think we conceded the least goals in the Spartan Prem. This year, well, like I said, with us getting Solomon Afori, we've actually started to score more goals. So I suppose we've had a couple of high-scoring games, 4-2s, but on average, I would say that we're more 1-0, 2-0 winners.
That'll help you. You'll need to have that. Yeah.
Whether that helps down there.
Yeah, you mentioned last year in the Spartan League, because you were one of the sides that got switched in the redistribution over the summer by the FA. As Matt said, your highest position, third in the Spartan League last year, and then you get moved into the Essex Senior League. And has that changed the sort of players you go for, the style of play that you're looking for, or is it there's not a lot of difference between the two?
If I'm honest, I was really happy with the move because I actually come from Camden, and a lot of the players come from Camden, isn't it? And so it was a lot less travelling. I think it worked out saying near almost 500 miles over the base of the season for away games. So the move was really good squad-wise for travelling. The leagues, I don't think there's much difference in standard. Walthamstow are sort of the team to beat in our new league. And I feel if we finish above them, we'd be close to promotion.
Okay.
Yeah, I came to that game away. It was a very good competitive one-all draws. It was a very good game, that Ant, wasn't it? And I'll be trying to get to the home leg for that one because there's a little bit on it as well.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good game. Very good game. Yeah.
They're a very good side.
I just noticed hashtag United because obviously Jimmy Jackson's involved, a goalkeeper who have played for me for a couple of clubs, and they've sort of come up and they get a big following as well, don't they? Like, certainly on social media, you know, but what would your local derby be then in this fixture?
I would say Cockfosters. And to be fair, the one defeat you see on the league table, we actually lost to Cockfosters this season in a, to be fair to them, fair play to them. I mean, we missed a lot of chances. Their keeper made many saves. They defended valiantly and they got the result. But that was the one loss we took this season in the league.
Well, you see what you've just said. Let's hope Dawes will send that in the press conference after Saturday.
Yeah, hopefully.
And if Dawes is listening, I'm only joking. Yeah.
It's great because I know Ant so well and I know Dawes so well. I've spoken to both of them, Bairdie, the assistant manager. Obviously, Hadley, we've already spoken about my connection there. And I played from, I retired there. That's where I finished. I started my coaching career at Havant. So to even go back 10 years and go to Hadley, you're going to be playing away against Havant at Waterlooville. You know, who lost at Anfield however long ago, and
I know
it's just beyond belief, really. So enjoy the day, Ant, and I'll be hopefully celebrating with you after.
Yeah,
thank you, mate.
Best of luck, Andy, and thank you for joining us on the non-league football.
Thank you, fellas. Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
Cheers, Ant. Cheers.
Bye.
Excellent. That's one of them. There's very few, and you know, people think I joke when I say this. There is genuinely very few days where you sit in a dugout as a football manager with not a care in the world. And Ant's got that Saturday because he can have... You don't want to get smashed, but you genuinely can be excited and not worried at all. And well, you've been a manager and around dressing rooms long enough. How many times do you get to do that?
Not often.
Not often is the answer, yeah.
Hopefully, you just the only thing is like my brother, because of, like there's a real good feel about Barnet. There's a lot of Barnet fans.
Yeah,
who won't go and support Barnet at the Hive because they're outside the London Borough of Barnet. So it's probably the biggest blessing for Hadley was Barnet moving out of Barnet, because now they had 202 paying people come watch Ramsgate at home.
Wow. Yeah. So they'll get a few travel.
All right, that was Ramsgate. It was a big FA Cup game. Yeah. But now there's a lot of Barnet fans who will go and watch Hadley over Barnet. Which is a lovely little ground, lovely setting, lovely little bar. You've got Wimble in the back, pitch is lovely, playing some good football, winning games, doing well in the league, good FA Cup run, good. And all they do is hop on the bus back in the High Street and have a few beers and the curry.
Yeah.
So they're taking two supporters coaches down to Havant.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
There's over 100 people, but just, they're not really Hadley fans, if you like, but they're Barnet people who now are following a Hadley
But that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Well, that's a discussion we've had many times. Yeah. Is that, you know, as a non-league club, what you'd be happy to be everybody's second club.
Yeah.
You know, and with Barnet now, like yourselves, doing so well in the National League, it is non-league, but it's a different level, and we all appreciate that. So if you can pick up fans that even if it's the first result they're looking for, you know that when you go on a cup run, when you're looking to sell your cheaper season tickets, I was looking, the season tickets at Hadley were what, £30.
It was my idea. It was my idea, £30 a season ticket, which gets you into a 200 club. So I said, if for £30, I'll go around the pubs now. There's loads of Hadley season ticket holders who have never even been at the ground. Because for that £30, there's 15 cash prizes. At the end of the season, last home game of the season, we'll do a draw.
Yeah.
There's so 30 quid. I said to my brother, how many season tickets did you hold last year? He said 30. So 30 times 30, 900 quid. So I said, right. So I said, why don't we sell 200? He's like, yeah, right. I said 200 times 30 quid is £6,000.
Yeah.
At the moment, club are making 900 for season tickets. Let's make £3,000. £3,000 to the club, £3,000 prize pool.
Yes.
10 cash prizes of £100. 4 250s and 1 1,000.
Oh yeah, last game of the season.
So there's now people who are drinking in the pubs, like half full in Hadley, going, do you want a season ticket for £30? You're basically in a 200 club. Don't even have to go up there if you don't want to.
Yeah.
But you've got a chance of winning a grand. They'll have a couple of beers, they go, here.
Yeah.
£30. And then they've never been up there.
No, it's a brilliant idea.
Suddenly they win £1,000. But now what it's doing though is they're going, I've got a season ticket in my pocket.
And
I might just go around the corner and go and watch them for an afternoon.
Have a couple of beers.
And then I'll go out to the pub after and have a couple of beers. Yeah. And they're going, actually, this is all right. That's something. They're spending a couple of beers behind the bar as well. And
yeah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Yeah, so that's what they're doing.
You stand a chance, you know.
I know. I ran the golf day for him yesterday. Do the two quizzes a year.
Yeah, yeah.
Just all trying to help him.
No, it's but it is. It's the, you know, as Matt says, to watch a club go from the park till a recognised side in the FA Cup against a team that was at Anfield is
beyond comprehension.
Yeah, really. It's mad stuff. Yeah. You know, it's the stuff that dreams are made of. That's why this competition, it might lose a bit of what it is in the later stages of it these days, but at our level, it is the magic of the cup. It's this cup.
So let's round off the show and head on over, as usual, to Non-League Paper Towers. And welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. It's senior writer at the Non-League Paper, David Richardson.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. And gearing up for a weekend of football. It's the FA Cup third qualifying round. We've spoken to the manager over at Hadley, seeing if they can get maybe a result at Havant and Waterlooville. But it's exciting times in the FA Cup. I was looking through the fixtures for the weekend. I'm looking at the National League. It's a big tie, Barnet against Dagenham and Redbridge. I think probably from the outset of the season, but people were thinking, well, Barnet, you know, they'd probably like to be up there in the playoffs. And we know that Dagenham and Redbridge had new owners come in and that, but it's fourth against fifth this game. It's quite a big tie.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I was actually looking at the fixtures this weekend, and you look at them, and suddenly sort of every game seems to be quite close, or between a sort of top team, two teams, you know, going well, or two teams at the bottom, and suddenly they all become very hard to call. I think it's about this stage of the season now where things are beginning to maybe reflect or not reflect what people might have thought the season was going to pan out right, but also the time of season where clubs and managers are looking at how they've been getting on and maybe reassessing or adjusting aims or bringing players in, getting rid of players. And like you say, Barnet, Dagenham is just another one of those interesting fixtures this weekend. Barnet had a great result in midweek against Ayrshire Fylde, who are a side, myself included, who tipped to be right up at the top of the division again this season, having lost in the playoff final last year. But it just hasn't really worked out for them so far this season. Barnet winning 4-0 there. Really impressive. Darren Curry's got a good, young, talented squad. Few England C internationals in there. And I think they're beginning to play to their potential by the looks of things. Dagenham had a little bit of a shaky start at the start of the season. But I feel like they're just up and running now. I think they're on a long, unbeaten run. I think it's maybe 10 games. And Peter Taylor there, I think they're living up to their perhaps ambition that they wanted to show this season. Obviously, with the new investment coming in and some of the players that they signed there. And I think it's starting to click now. And as I said, we're beginning to see how things are unfolding this season and which way they're going to go.
And it just shows how competitive that division is. But aren't all divisions, and you mentioned about things beginning to shake up. But as ever, we've seen the managerial merry-go-round in full swing. Is that a merry-go-round swing? I don't know. They just go round and round, don't they? I'm looking down the list of the things that I've picked out this week. You've got Bishop Stortford. Steve Smith stepped down as joint manager there, leaving Jamie Cureton in sole charge. Tom Rothery's left Brightlingsea Regent. I know he's been there for a while, and just looked like he'd said a few things about budgetary concerns over the summer, and it just looks like he's maybe reached as far as he could go with there. And we always mention about not going back. You know, clubs should go forward, but probably more often than not, we see managers leave and then we see managers come back again. So, yeah, Market Drayton Town. I think Martin Davies is back there for the third time this week. And I believe Bradford Park Avenue have gone down a similar route with Marcus Law and Lee Fowler, the interim managers, leaving and an old face returning.
Yeah, Mark Bauer's gone back in there, of course, was only at the club 5 months ago. They had a phenomenal season last year, given some of the restraints at the club and largely being sort of outsiders for getting in the playoffs, which they achieved. Unfortunately, they lost out in those. And then suddenly Mark Bauer was leaving the club, which was obviously a surprise to a lot of people. I think during last season, there were sort of some rumours that, you know, the budget was being cut sort of mid-season, or maybe sort of promotion was perhaps sort of above the what the club was maybe capable of at the time. You know, a couple of sort of senior and key players moved on around sort of January, February time, I remember, but the club sort of dismissed those rumours. But obviously, Mark Bauer's departure then in the summer was a surprise, and I think as a result of that, they had a lot of changes in their squad. Obviously, Marcus Law and Lee Fowler came in very early on into the season to try and turn things around, but it just hasn't worked there. And obviously, an 8-0 defeat at Brackley Town last weekend is clearly sort of a major concern. The club's second from bottom in National League. Law has conceded the most goals in the division and scored the least. So the signs aren't great there. But interesting, Mark Bauer's gone back in. You know, I think it's obviously, like all managers on out of work, he's looking for an opportunity. And he was telling me this week that, funny enough, the sort of the first one that came up was one he'd already done. So, you know, I think he's going back in there clearly at a time where it's significantly different to where they were last season. But when he first went into the club in 2016, he took over about this sort of time when they were actually bottom of the division at that stage. And then obviously 18 months later, they ended up in the playoffs. So it is a rescue mission that he's going into. As I say, very different to where they were heading last season. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether he can have the impact there and try and turn things around.
Yeah, and it's a regular topic on this show, the importance of number twos and your assistant managers. A point I put to Matt Gray earlier on in the show, who's now stepped up at Sutton United. And interesting to see at Ebbsfleet United, Gary Hill has got a new assistant, in Ian Hendon leaving as number two there. And in comes Kevin Watson, who's been a number two. I remember him under Teddy Sheringham at Stevenage. I think at some time at Eastleigh, Hungerford Town as well. I don't know, he's had spells as manager, but it is important that if you're looking to stabilise a club and maybe link the manager with the players and get the best out of the players, your assistant manager is probably the most vital ingredient if you're signed.
Yeah, I think in non-league there's a lot of sort of out and out managers as such, sort of, you know, more sort of a manager who signs the players and puts them into the formation, but then sort of relies on a coach or two to sort of do the hands-on training. Obviously, at the top level nowadays, I think they're described as head coaches, really, rather than managers. But I think, yeah, the manager, sort of the old-school manager, I guess, in non-league is still pretty relevant. And as you say, Tim, you know, you do have to rely on your coaches and your assistants for help and advice, particularly on the training ground. As I say, it's normal sort of at the top level for sort of the main man to be the one dictating all the sessions. But it's different in non-league, and that's not to say that, you know, all managers are like that in non-league. Of course they aren't, but as you say, they are important and interesting to see Kevin Watson going in there. I know Gary Hill is very much sort of a man manager and is very good at his recruitment in terms of players and building size, like he's done for, I think, probably over sort of 2 decades, maybe coming
since
on to sort
before
of 3 decades.
Since before you were in
nappies,
really, David. Since before you were in
nappies. Yes, very much so. And yeah, obviously aren't having the best of times. I saw Nathan Ashmore, highly rated goalkeeper, has moved on this week to Boreham Wood. And Ebbsfleet have brought in Josh Payne, who from Crawley Town on loan, who Gary Hill had at Woking, who's a very good technical midfielder, who will surely be a good signing for them, I would have thought.
And another familiar topic. It seems like I've got like a bingo card, and I'm just scratching these off. Is the importance of being a business as a non-league football club? I mean, we had Brian Gunn, the chairman of Wembley FC, on the again recently discussing the issue that they had with the name of Wembley and the trademark, and they lost being able to protect the Wembley FC name themselves. But some good news for City of Liverpool this week on a trademark case.
Yeah, it was quite an interesting one, which maybe has flown under the radar a little bit, is that Liverpool, as in the Premier League club, put in an application for them to trademark the word Liverpool, basically, in sort of all football-related business sort of cases. And obviously, this has wider impacts to the Liverpool community and other local football clubs in the area, the City of Liverpool FC being one of those, a club that was only formed in 2015, but has had some great success, is, of course, now at step four, having won promotion last season. And basically the Liverpool FC put in this bid for the trademark, and there was quite a sort of furore around them doing that, with sort of local tradesmen and such being affected by it, because they felt, you know, they would have to then go to the club for permission to use the name on certain things. And of course, City of Liverpool FC was a main part of that, really, and they argued the case. They met with Peter Moore, who's the chief executive of Liverpool, who, to his credit, was very handled himself very well in the issue. He quickly got in contact with the club. He invited them to a meeting, which Paul Manning, the chairman of the club, who I spoke to this week, went along to, and they argued their case. And as you say, it was officially rejected, the bid, and thankfully it will have no repercussions on City of Liverpool or sort of any of the businesses that might have been affected by it. So a good news story for a non-league club and the city, really.
Oh, we love the good news stories, and it is important, a business in non-league, but it's also important that everybody gets on with one another as well, isn't it? So you've already given us an insight into some of the pieces that we can read about in this week's non-league paper. What else can we expect to see, David?
Well, of course, not this weekend, but next weekend is non-league day, so the 10th instalment of non-league day. So we're previewing lots of things to do with next weekend, offers that clubs are putting on. We'll be speaking to James Doe, who of course founded the day, and we'll basically just be highlighting sort of the good work that the day does, really, for non-league and for clubs, and hopefully it will give people who are reading the paper, who are maybe unsure of where to go next weekend, a little look at again, they might like to go to, or an event or an offer or something they might like to take part in.
Well, we look forward to reading all about that, and looking forward to non-league day as well. David, thanks for joining us, and we look forward to reading the non-league paper on Sunday.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you to Dave Anderson for joining me.
Pleasure.
And a pleasure to have Matt Gray in with us as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. A big thank you to all of our guests, and a big thank you to everybody that listens. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson is at Dave Anderson 78. Caroline Barker's at Caroline Barker. Myself at Tim Fuel. You can find us every week on Audio Boom, on iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA